St. Louis, DGS 104.1 FM KMOX. Dave Murray was just saying, but man, what a gorgeous couple of days. Great weekend, too. Like, you know how I like the rainy days? Saturday was pretty cool, nice and rainy and gloomy. Yeah. Yesterday, today, just gorgeous.
I got another little sunburn yesterday.
Yeah?
Very slight. And I was wearing my sunscreen and everything, but I was just out a little too long.
Tennis?
Yeah.
I was out of doors for 13 hours yesterday.
I was out of doors maybe 13 seconds all weekend.
But looking out that window, man, it was gorgeous.
It really was. Poked my head out, took a sniff, got back on the couch, took a sniff.
Do you ever do that for real, though, when you're having like a really lazy day? It's like, I should go get like 20 seconds of fresh air and then go back inside.
Oh, and I do. I will literally walk out in the front yard and go, that's enough.
I did my duty.
Andrew, welcome back.
Hello.
He's back.
I'm back.
So I didn't hear any news flashes from Vegas or Portland, so I guess it went okay.
It went fantastically. It was a really wonderful trip. Until one thing happened at the end, and then I'll get to that. But I went to my friend's wedding in Portland. The trio that own Fortuna Games, the game store that I go to, they got married out in Vegas, and Megan and I went. And it was super duper duper fun. They got married at Taco Bell.
All right.
It was the best wedding I have ever been.
Probably the best wedding buffet ever.
It was so chill. And by the way, shockingly conventional for like a wedding in Taco Bell.
So you know what I mean? They had to okay it with Taco Bell.
So Taco Bell in Vegas offers this.
Oh, okay.
It's like a package you can get.
Yeah, it's like a package you can get. It's like 700 something bucks.
It's when you buy the 20 taco pack, they throw in a wedding.
They throw in a wedding for free. There's like a little chapel on the second floor. And then after that, they had a DJ. They had an open bar where you could get the alcoholic Baja Blast slushies.
Dude,
that's great.
I love this.
They had an officiant. They had as many, they could pick seven Taco Bell items, and then they just kept refreshing that little buffet of items over and over again all night.
Nice.
Yeah, they had it for like 3 hours.
I tried to leave Andrew alone on his vacation. You know, I want him to have a good, relaxing time and not think about work. But I was pestering him quite frequently, like, so what are the Taco Bell? When are you going to know what the Taco Bell items are?
Well, that was my thing, too. I asked him like 2 months in advance. I was like, so what seven items are you going to do? And they were like, I don't know. It's Taco Bell. I think you just decide when you get there. Like, they don't need days to prepare.
That's a fair point. Yeah, it's all the same stuff.
See, I'm telling you, you should quit the show, move to Vegas, and be a Taco Bell wedding planner.
Like a Taco Bell wedding consultant?
Yes.
Advise people on the seven items that they should get.
Don't sleep on the Nachos Bel Grande.
The Chalupa Supremes are very fresh today. I will say they're very fresh. The Pico is fresh out of the box.
Do a taste test of the same ingredients that go into everything.
Yeah. Let me try the ground beef for the chalupa. Let me try the ground beef for the soft taco. Yes, yes, yes. I'll try the ground beef for the nacho supreme.
That's cool. I respect that.
Yeah, it was incredible. And then I think they have some connections out there. The after party was at the 48th floor of the Cosmo in a suite. And we had a balcony that looked down on the Bellagio fountain.
Yeah.
Nice.
So we just spent the evening, like, after the wedding, looking at this incredible fountain. My wife wept because, you know, we don't get out much. So the fountain was very, very exciting.
You just go outside for a couple seconds and go back in.
Yeah, we went outside and sniffed a little, and then we went back in. it was 106 degrees in Vegas the whole time we were there. But you really don't feel it. Like, it is really true what they say about the, like, dry heat versus the humidity. It's really not that bad. You get into the shade, it's like 20 degrees cooler.
Yeah. You sweat less.
Yeah. And then the day after that, they had a private cabana at the Circa Stadium swim, the big giant swim complex. And I watched the Cardinals beat the Reds on the big giant.
That's awesome.
40-foot TV screen. It was incredible.
How many people were involved in the wedding?
There was like 40 people who ended up going. It was a little too many for the Taco Bell, actually. We were pretty packed in there. And then I went up north to Portland on Monday to see my brother and my sister-in-law and her family. And I went whale watching. Jeez. And I went through the mountains, which the mountains in Oregon are obviously like incredible and beautiful and awesome. We went kayaking at the foot of Mount Hood in this like beautiful little lake there called Trillium Lake. And everything about it was absolutely, I ate a lot of really great home-cooked Indian food because my sister-in-law's family is Indian. And so that's like my favorite kind of food.
Yeah, I love Indian food.
Yeah, just getting all of this like very like fresh homemade food was just incredible. And then on the last day, and it was funny because I had just, Rachel was like, all right, so last day, you having fun? You thinking about, you know, you getting ready to come back and all that stuff? I was like, you know what? I this place is paradise. I could absolutely live here. But I don't live here, so, you know, I'm ready to come back, see all my people, you know, get back into the routine, get back home, get back to work. And then about 5 minutes later, Rachel, that I texted you? You know what? Actually, no, I take it back. F this state. I hate this place. I'm never coming here again. We stopped at a little place called Vista House. It's in the Columbia River Gorge, right by this series of beautiful waterfalls. And so we got to look out on the gorge and Washington State across the river. And while we were there for about 10 minutes, somebody broke into our rental car, stole my wife's purse, which had her ID for getting on the plane at 8 o'clock the next morning, and also the keys to the rental car.
Oh, my gosh.
So we were completely stranded. I actually have kind of a funny picture because we're at this, like, the most gorgeous scenic view you've ever seen in your entire life, but we're, like, dealing with this horrible crisis. So for like 4 hours, I alternated between being like miserable and horrified, and I don't know what we're gonna do. And it was very hot on Friday in Portland. Like they have a huge heat wave going on there right now that pretty much started when this happened.
How'd you get out of that one?
So we ended up. So we called the rental car people. So they had to send out a tow truck, which took my father to the airport where he could exchange for a different rental car, which they also charged us for, which is great. So we had to pay for like the one that we didn't get to drive anymore because the key got stolen.
Did they damage the car?
No. So my sister-in-law's father drives a Tesla. And so while we're in the gift shop getting ready to leave and go back out to the cars and leave, and we're going to go to a rose garden in Portland, he got a notification to his phone that someone had tried to open his Tesla door. And I was like, and he's like, I'm a little worried about this. I think I might go up and check it out. And I was like, oh, it's fine. Everybody in Portland drives a Tesla. It's fine. Like, I'm sure it's just a mistake. Somebody thought it was their car and tried to get in. And oh, I was wrong. And no, sure enough, we have a video of the guy. It was like a dude with like a man, like an older dude with like a man bun in a red pickup. And he just was like, he got out of his truck and was like, just kind of trying doors until he found one. And we had left ours unlocked because I'm stupid. And then my wife had left her purse in there just because we were only going to be at this little spot for 10 minutes or less. And he just grabbed it and ran off with it. But the good part of the story and the way that Oregon kind of won me back in the end is that after spending like 4 hours trying to figure out, all right, what do we do? How do you fly without an ID? And, you know, how can we make this happen? How do we get our car so we can actually leave the like top of this mountain where we're stranded? Is that, I guess the guy, after he had decided that there was nothing, because there's nothing of value in her purse. We had no cash. We had nothing. And I'm sure he tried her debit card, but we found it. We discovered this right after he stole it. So we had the cards canceled before he got off the mountain for sure. And then he, I guess, just dumped the purse out the window and somebody found it and took it to a fire station and the fire chief took it to her house and contacted Megan on Facebook, like just by searching Facebook for her because she had her ID and, reached out to Megan on Facebook and was like, hey, if you want to come, here's my address. If you want to come get your purse back.
Wow.
I know. Absolutely. So Oregon kind of won me back in the end with that little bit.
That's pretty great.
Yeah.
That little bit of goodness. Also, weirdly enough, everything was in the purse except for, we think, so her wallet was taken, not her ID and cards. All the cards and stuff were taken out, and the actual physical wallet, which was not like a designer wallet or anything, he took that. So that's a little weird. Maybe he just wanted like a gift for his girl or whatever. And then I think we lost a Hello Kitty magnet that we had bought at the Hello Kitty Cafe in Vegas. I think he took that too.
Strange robber.
Very strange
in the first place. Very he's tracking you.
That's
since
what
the
he was
Hello
looking
Kitty
for. Yeah,
cafe.
That's all he was looking
he's
for.
He's just trying to collect us. These. Yeah.
We had the we got the last magnet.
He's like, yes,
I will get it back. He's sitting behind us on the plane to Portland, just grinding his teeth with rage. I can't wait to get.
Is that a terrible feeling?
It was the worst. I've never had something like that happen to me before. I've never been like robbed in that way. Like I've had people break into my car if I left my car unlocked or whatever and root around and steal change or whatever. But I've never had been robbed in that way.
Root around for a long time in that car.
Yeah, no, they didn't believe me. They didn't find anything. Oh, and also a Gatorade, which is funny. I had a Gatorade Zero in Megan's purse and he took that because I guess he wanted some refreshment. But funny enough, last time my car was broken into, same thing. The only thing they took was one Gatorade Zero.
Always got to keep a Gatorade in there.
And it's like, if you're out burglaring, I guess you get a little thirsty.
Sure. Yeah.
Those Hello Kitties don't steal themselves.
That's hard work, man.
But yeah,
gotta stay hydrated.
Absolutely a horrifying thing to have happen. Insanely like violating. And it was weird to like look in her purse and like everything had been moved around and everything. Like it was clear he had rifled through and touched everything. And it's just a very weird feeling. But it all worked out in the end, I guess.
All right.
Yeah.
That's a pretty classic Andrew vacation.
Yeah. Everything went perfect until the very end when everything almost crashed and burned.
But boy, that could have been worse.
Oh, it could have been so much worse.
I don't even know what you'd do. Like, I guess you don't fly.
Rachel helped me find some stuff, and then we found some other stuff. Like, we called the, airport and talked to them a little bit.
There's a way to do it, yeah.
It's like
but
extra
it takes,
screening.
Like, 2 hours in advance or something, right?
Yeah, it costs, like, $50, and you got to get to the airport, like, 4 hours in advance, because what they have to do, you have to provide them with as much as you possibly can to prove that you're you, and then, like, physical evidence. And then they run a background check.
Gotcha.
But it takes like a long time, apparently.
Wow.
Welcome back, guys. DGS on KMOX 122. Gorgeous day out there. Our buddy Maria Kina is here from the newsroom.
Hey.
Sinkhole, huh?
A very large sinkhole, yes.
Of course. Well, of course.
I mean, and I don't think it's going away anytime soon either.
Yeah.
You pointed out, I saw the news coverage, so I'm familiar with the sinkhole, but I did not clock how pretty much right up to the pillar that holds up the overpass is.
I was very shocked to see that. At first when because, we've seen sinkholes
sinkholes.
Yeah, and pretty large ones around the city. But when I saw that pillar, I thought, oh, wait, this is much different from before. So that's when I start putting calls out. Specifically to MoDOT first, and saying, what's the situation here? Well, we're monitoring it. Now, this was Saturday afternoon at about 1:30, 2 o'clock, something like that. I found out yesterday in their press conference that they held, which was the mayor and several city officials, street department, water, MoDOT, that it actually happened Friday night in the evening. Yet, MoDOT and apparently MSD didn't find out about it until early Saturday morning.
That's good.
So by the time 5:30 in the evening comes along, St. Louis police say we're helping MoDOT shut down the highway. That was 24 hours after the fact.
Wow.
Which shocked me a lot.
Yes.
Just to catch people up, this is a sinkhole on I-44, like kind of near, it's not Lumiere Casino anymore.
Horseshoe.
Am I getting the
it's on
general
the main road,
area, right?
It is on the city street, though, underneath the overpass.
Okay.
So it's technically Broadway and Biddle.
Right.
Okay. And that's the way you would go to get onto 70.
If you were coming from like Jones Dome area.
Yeah. It is right by the Jones Dome.
It's that confusing area because there's a lot of weaving roads and then Broadway comes in and then you kind of wiggle around
it's
to get onto 70.
It's the area that anytime I'm on it, I'm like, this is so stupid.
Well, it's the area that gets a ton of traffic every day.
It also has a ton of traffic, but also I think it's confusing because they refer to it as 70 and 44. I don't know why. I've never understood why it isn't 70 that entire route. But
I think it's just because it leads to 44, and for map purposes, they kind of blend.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just getting you in that direction.
Yeah, because
right?
I think Saturday there was confusion. People were thinking 70 was shut down, and in fact it wasn't. It was 44.
Yeah. Mm. And is it getting bigger? Is it getting deeper?
Well, according to MoDOT yesterday, the press conference that they had, Jen Wade, who is one of their engineers, said that they're keeping a very close eye on it because it could. It certainly could expand the way it is right now, and especially if they have any vibrations above on the highway, that could really exacerbate the situation. And I mean, when we're telling you that it was close, those pillars were close to the break, that's not an exaggeration. I would say it was probably 20 feet, maybe 25 feet, not very much, maybe not even that much.
Yeah. Man.
So it was very disturbing, and I just questioned why it took so long to shut down the highway.
Did they have anything for you?
No.
This is becoming a pattern.
On Saturday, I even asked for an interview with city officials, and they told me no one's available, and they sent me a little statement. So,
it's the weekend. We can't ask people to do anything on the weekend.
And, you know, those are the kinds of positions where it's kind of like a doctor, police officer, firefighter. There aren't holidays or weekends. You just, when the situation demands your presence, you need to be there. And I'm not saying that they weren't there, but unfortunately, they weren't providing any information to the media so that we could get it out to the public about here's what's going on. Mm.
This is really interesting timing because the collapse happened because of water main breaks.
Correct.
Well, Friday, the aldermen are talking about advancing a bill to raise water rates in the city because we're going to have to, like, make up for lost time eventually. And water rates are going to, if this passes, go way up.
Like 75%.
But in order to
like
kind of compensate for all of these repairs and changes to the infrastructure we're going to have to make. I mean, I just find that timing like almost poetic.
Well, it was. And if you remember last week, the marathon session at the Board of Aldermen how to spend the Rams money, $10 million of that, they were said was definitely going to the water department so they can start to make some of those repairs. It's nowhere near what they need.
I've heard like 150.
I think it's 750.
Oh,
It's a lot of money that they need in order to make that. And it's a very old system. It's over 100 years old. We're an old city.
Where are we ever going to get that kind of money?
I don't think that we will in any reasonable amount of time. But I would imagine what they're going to do is maybe attack some of the areas.
Triage.
Yeah, absolutely. Where it's the worst.
Yeah.
And I would think places like that where you have a highway over it would be of a big concern.
Yes.
So,
jeez,
it was. And the other thing that I should mention is police are saying the gooseneckers are coming down there, whether they're on foot or whether they're on by car. They all want to come down and see the sinkhole. And that's causing problems.
Yes.
It just causes
so
a big
stay
jam.
Away is what you're saying.
Yeah, stay away. I mean, I know it's curious, but I think there are enough pictures on social media where you could see where it is without going down there and causing a problem for the first responders and workers.
Well, we need the tourism, so.
Maybe that's the new thing, right?
Come see our sinkhole. Thank you, Maria.
Thank you.
Welcome back, guys. DGS on KMOX 133. Cardinal Report is sponsored by Rawlings. Visit the Rawlings experience at Westport. I'm very excited. I get to go out to the Rawlings experience at Westport on Wednesday and build a custom glove.
Nice.
Super, super excited.
Very nice.
So I'm going to do something a little different here during this segment than we usually do in the DGS. As you know, I love, respect, and support all my fellow personalities and all the different shows, but that's their show. This is my show. But I'm going to make an exception here because yesterday I was listening to Tom on Sports in a Sunday, and he had Klaibs on. And everyone who knows Klaibs or follows Cardinal baseball knows that his big thing is Flag Day. Don't talk to me until Flag Day. At Flag Day, maybe we'll know who the Cardinals are, who they're not. And so Tom had him on because yesterday was Flag Day. And he threw it to Klaibs. And Klaibs talks for about 6 minutes, just straight. And he goes position by position and goes through the whole Cardinals lineup. This is good. This is not so good. Here's where I think we are. And I texted Klaibs immediately. I'm like, dude, that's the best hit I've heard you do. I'm going to play that on the show tomorrow. And Wheels didn't get to hear it, so that'll be fun. He can listen to Klaibs and then, you know, comment what he agrees with, what he doesn't. But I think you'll enjoy this. If you're a Cardinals fan, you'll definitely enjoy this. So this is Mike Claiborne from Sports on a Sunday yesterday talking about where the Cardinals stand on Flag Day.
Between spring training and June 14th, you go through a lot of things. You have good weather. You have bad weather. You have injuries. You have people who surprise you. You have people who disappoint you. You have cold streaks, hot streaks. You have road trips. You probably go to the West Coast at least once. And you really have an idea of who you are. And not only as individuals, but as a team. And that means from the manager on down. Does he have enough? Does he have enough for support? And all those things you really can determine by today. And with that, you say to yourself, okay, this is who we are. What do we need to be better? And you have time. You don't have to wait until the trade deadline like some teams do. And then all of a sudden they think the chemistry is going to click. And sometimes it doesn't. So in this situation, you have a chance to know who you are, know what you need, and know where to get it, because it also includes the organization. Your scouts are out looking at other teams as well and seeing what players could fit in with this ball club. You also have teams that say to themselves, all right, are we renters or are we buyers? And there's a difference, because if you're looking to just move a guy at the deadline just because he's on a one-year contract or you feel like you have something better, you move them, but you have to understand you're not going to get like their number one prospect in return. So you can be a buyer, which means you're going to be willing to move someone of value for someone plus of greater value or reasonably equal value, but maybe greater value at the position you're searching for. So that's how you come to where you're at now. So with all that said, excuse me, I really like where the Cardinals are. I mean, you're 8 games over .500. You look at the division. You know, everybody's trying to figure out who they are. It's amazing. When we started the month, everybody was really happy about the fact that everybody in the division is over 500 or at 500. Well, that's changed a little bit. We're starting to see a little bit of separation. You're starting to see some teams that are really trying to figure out just who they are. And the Cardinals are one of them. So when you look at them as a ball club, you say to yourself from a ball club perspective, okay, what do you look like at first base? You're set. Second base, you moved Donovan to see if Weatherholt could fill that void. Mission accomplished so far. Mason Wynn is playing well. Then you had the situation at third base where you moved Arenado and his contract to see if Nolan Gorman could fit the bill. Didn't work. You go to the outfield. Lars Nootbaar didn't return until recently, so you had a number of different people playing left field. Some of them were okay. And some of them, it gave them the opportunity to move to center field when you think of Nathan Church. Jordan Walker is obviously the surprise of the season. In spring training, you saw him like everyone else. We were kind of scratching our heads saying, maybe they ought to leave him in Memphis. Well, that would have been a huge mistake because he's one of the best players in the game right now as we speak. Your catching situation is one that you like to be better behind the plate as far as throwing runners out, and then Paez was able to do it, but offensively he didn't give you enough. You had Jimmy Crooks you wanted to get a longer look at. Herrera wanted to catch, so you give him 2 days out of the week, and he's been good so far. I think the home run power, I think he sacrificed with his catching because I think there's a lot more that goes into catching these days than you think. So there you have your eight. Now we get to the most important part, pitching. And if there's one need in this ball club, they need more pitching, period. And you can talk about another starter, but I think you have to look at your bullpen because you need two legitimate closers, okay? Yeah. The game has changed where, you know, you just call down the bullpen and here comes Suter, or here comes Chapman, or here comes whomever. And you could do that because you had a starting staff that could give you more than five innings, which meant you didn't have to use a closer every night like you do today. I mean, you have a team now with the Cardinals who have two pitchers who can't get through the fifth inning. And that's a problem because it all of a sudden puts more angst on your bullpen on a regular basis. So there are going to be nights where you won't have certain people because of the night before. There are going to be nights where you're going to need a shutdown closer, but you used him two nights in a row and he's not going to be available to you. And one of the great things about Oliver Marmol is the fact that he knows how to manage a bullpen. He and Dusty Blake have done a phenomenal job with some short pieces because we thought Ryan Stanek was going to be the guy. Hasn't been what you'd hope for. Plenty of room for him to grow into the position. We thought Matt Swanson was going to be that maybe 1A closer. He had some problems. He's come back now. He's looked much better. Then you have Riley O'Brien, who got off to a great start, and now he's kind of hit a bump in the road. And then you have some other pieces that you're figuring out just who they are. And I guess the most pleasant surprise has been George Soriano, and maybe he could be your 1A closer. I don't know. So that's kind of what your ball club looks like. So my thing is you have to find more pitching. And is it in your organization? That's the question, because if it's not, it's time to look now, because everyone is looking for pitching. And everyone thinks they have the pieces in order to make sure they can get that one person to get them over the hump. Think about it, Tom.
Yeah.
There's some really good teams with some high payrolls that are scratching their heads on what are we going to do now. The Cardinals don't have that to worry about as far as high payroll, but they do want to be better. And I guess it comes down to who in Memphis is ready to take that next step.
I was going to say, you know, is Luis Gastelum ready for that? Is Max Ragic ready for that?
Yeah, I think those are the next two guys that you have to take a look at. I mean, Gastelum caught everybody's eye in spring training with the changeup. Now, he's been touched up a little bit since then, but I think we see enough of him to say, okay, this is a guy we might want to take a longer look at. Max Ragic was the pitcher of the year 2 years ago in the organization. Kind of hit a bump in the road last year. This year got out to a little bit of a slow start. But his most recent outings, he's been very good. And so maybe he's a guy. Now, with that said, that means you have to make some other 40-man roster moves because those guys are not on the 40-man. So there's going to be a tough decision to be made here somewhere along the way if you think they're ready to step in and contribute from this point moving forward.
Okay, there you go. So, you know, I don't know nearly as much as any of these guys, but I appreciated the comprehensive look on Flag Day. Wheels, what do you think?
Hard to disagree with anything in there. The only thing I might, and this is a really minor thing, the only thing I might push back on is I don't think that Herrera's lost power because of catching, because his bat speed hasn't changed. He's, you know, it's not like he's slowed down because of it. He's just not hitting the ball in the air. Compared to where he was last year, his average launch angle is down 4 degrees, which is a lot. That's why he's got a great on-base percentage. He's still hitting for, you know, decent numbers overall. He's just not hitting home runs because he's not hitting the ball in the air as much. Other than that, though, Claves could not be more right about the pitching. The pitching's a real problem, especially Libertor and Leahy. And you're getting to the point where you got to figure this out. Think about this. I'll close this part of this because I was looking at this because we're going to talk about this tonight on Rush Hour. The pitching is a real problem. Bernie and Matt and I were texting about Leahy and Libertor. We've been texting about Jojo Romero, who's kind of getting run into the ground, which is what Claves is talking about. A lot of these relievers are getting run into the ground because, especially Leahy and Libertor, but they're not alone, but especially those two just don't get deep into games. They cannot go through the third time in the order. Last year, Eric Fetty had a 5.49 ERA and a 5.41 expected ERA, so about what he deserved. Right? It just kind of shows you how hard the quality of contact was against him. This year, Kyle Leahy's a 4.64, but his expected is 6.59. And we could not wait to get rid of Eric Fetty last year. We could not wait to move him out because that's how bad it was. Leahy's actually been worse when it comes to the under-the-hood numbers, and it's not that far off in terms of the regular ERA. Last year, Miles Michaelis had a 4.84 ERA and a 5.27 expected ERA based on those same things. This year, Libertor is 4.71 and 5.44. So the same as or worse than Miles Michaelis. So what we wanted to see was to fix these rotation spots so that you don't have two guys that are absolutely killing you each time through. At least Michaelis got innings. Not that many because he was getting beat up. But the problem now is you have a similar dynamic developing. Now, you do have Dustin May, which is a huge upgrade. You have McGreevy full-time, which is an upgrade. He's been really good. And Palante has made a massive change in the positive. He's been really good this year, and it's not fake. It's not lucky. It's not fraudulent. It's real. But you still have two spots that are just as bad as your two worst spots last year.
I know that pitchers don't, they're not delivered in a box that says starter or relief, but is it possible that those two guys, Liberatore and Leahy, are just more natural relievers and we're really pushing them to be starters?
Yeah, very possible. When you look at their numbers as relievers and compare them to their numbers as starters, well, and again, to be fair, anybody who's capable of starting in the major leagues would probably have better numbers in the bullpen.
Sure.
Right? I mean, if you're capable of being a starter in the big leagues, and they're capable of doing this.
Yes.
This, the question is, are they low end,
yeah,
which makes them less valuable, or are they middling, which makes them more valuable, but they're not front of the rotation guys? So, no, I don't think there's any question that, I mean, look at the numbers. Leahy and Liberatore were both way more effective in those relief roles. And Leahy's 29. Liberatore's 26. It's not like they don't have potential to get better, but how high is that ceiling? And are they going to hurt you enough in the meantime where you can avoid making the change?
Welcome back, DGS on KMOX. Happy Monday. Vic says, sweet 16 of pork today. Nope.
No?
Nope.
Thought you were set on that.
Did you send it out yet?
He told me.
Yeah, I told him.
Okay, good. Did you tell Skip?
I did tell Skip.
Okay. Did Skip object?
No.
It's the sweet 16 of seafood.
Yeah, it's way different than pork.
Yeah.
Way better.
Because I tried to make a list of pork, and I'm kind of a pork boy.
Yeah.
And I couldn't come up with 16.
You just come up with like 8 or 10?
Without like repeating and being oh, this is from France. But
right, right.
Seafood, there's a gazillion.
Yeah.
And they're fun.
Yeah.
So
I told Andrew I've been preparing my whole life for this one.
Dude, if I were a giant D, I would take crab cakes first just to
go ahead.
It away from you.
I got more.
I had oysters for the first time last week.
And?
They're fine.
Yeah, not a fan.
I wouldn't pay for them again. I mean, I thought I had them at like an exceptionally good restaurant.
Yeah.
On like an ocean coast, you know what I mean? So I feel like if I tried them anywhere else, I probably would.
I mean, there are foods I like and there are foods I don't. Oyster is the only one that I have encountered where I'm like, I don't see a single redeeming thing. And I know that people love it, but it's like if you said, hey, this is my friend Jack, and he's going to spit a loogie, but it's the greatest loogie you're ever going to swallow. And I'm just like, I think I'm okay.
Yeah, it's like it had like a very lemony, like the kind of thing on it, and a bunch of seasoning and stuff like that. And I'm like, well, then I just like the lemony seasoning. I don't think
put
I like
this on
the
chicken.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
I don't think I like the oyster.
Now, are you not supposed to chew the oysters?
I've always been told you're not supposed to chew.
You're just supposed to swallow them.
Yeah,
down.
It's like a shot.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I had no interest in chewing
now,
that thing.
Growing up, I used to love fried oysters.
Yeah, it's because of all the breading.
Yeah.
But They're a little chewy, though.
Yeah, like every now and then it would pop out of it, and I'll just skip
that part.
Yeah,
just eat that crust.
We eat those all the time.
Yeah.
Is it like our era and where I grew up, the food was so strange that my parents picked. Like my dad would not eat any quote-unquote ethnic food.
Right.
So forget about, we never had Mexican, we never had Asian, like nothing like that.
No, when we were kids, it was the same. It was beef stew and hamburgers
pork
and
chops
hot dogs
and
pork chops. We never had Chinese food. We would get like Taco Bell, like if we were out with mom, because my mom liked that stuff, and we would stop and get Taco Bell. But when my dad was around, never.
Yeah.
My mom would make tacos, but only on the nights when my dad was not going to be home because he was refereeing hockey or something.
Yeah.
But now he loves tacos. Dummy, he missed out for all those years.
He's evolved.
Yeah.
Boy, did you guys see, Rach hadn't seen it. Have you guys seen the video of that lady being thrown off the bridge?
Yes.
Thinking that she's bungee jumping?
Yes.
Wheels, it's disturbing. You don't see her hit, but it's in Brazil. And it's on a train trestle, a bridge. And these guys they don't have any licensing at all. They just have a rope. Now, I'm not talking a bungee rope. I'm talking like a rope. And they hook you to it, and they raised the lady above their heads, walked out on a little plank, and throw her off the edge. And I've seen video of the girl that went right before her. And it doesn't look like a pleasant bungee jump. You pretty much just like, pow. Mm-hmm. But they didn't even hook her up. It wasn't like the bungee rope broke. They just didn't hook her up at all. And the rope, they had to like walk across the rope just to pick her up and throw
somebody
her.
Somebody get this rope out of the way. I'm trying to throw this lady off a bridge.
What in the world?
So they've been arrested for murder.
Hell yeah.
I mean, they should be.
They had to chase some of them. Some of them took off. They went running off into the woods when they realized.
Well, yeah, because they knew they were going to prison.
I mean, was everyone like drunk or something? Was that part of it?
I don't know.
I mean, you would almost think they would have like to not even think to hook up the very important piece of life-saving equipment.
The one thing that it's named after.
Yes.
21-year-old girl there with her fiance.
That is insane.
And yeah, I mean, you can see there's no rope attached or anything. They just pick her up and they walk her to the edge and they just hook her off.
And nobody around is like, hey, hey, hey.
Yeah, and even like after they threw her, they kind of walked back like, well, we know how this is going to end. Mm-hmm. And I guess someone was like, she just hit the ground.
Ugh. Jeez, man. That's insane. Mm.
Crazy.
You got to vet those places if you're going to.
That's why those things.
Look for a 5-star review and like a safety protocol.
I'm on the opposite edge of wheels. I don't put roller coasters in the same category as bungee jumping, but none of those things appeal to me.
No.
Like not worth the risk.
I would only do something like that to like prove something to myself, and I can do that in a different way.
Yes. Yes.
Hey, just jump off the couch.